Welcome to Ujiria, broadcasting live from Business Radio X Studios. Ujiria is a Greek word meaning health of body and mind in aging individuals. Ujiria Radio is a weekly show celebrating the heroes that contribute to the Ujiria of our elderly and disabled population. Now joining us in the studio are your hosts, Sam Grass and Brad Culp.
Good morning. This is Brad Culp. That was a little fast, but we're good. Yeah. It's all good. We have an assistant producer that's cutting his teeth this morning. Tell us your name again.
My name is Taylor. Yeah, I'm just getting into this, but we got it.
That's good. Hey, you know, I mean, you told me your name twice, and twice I forgot it. So there you go. But I won't forget it again.
Brad, right? Yeah, it's okay. We all forget every
touché,
now and then.
Touche. So did you watch the ball game over the weekend?
I did. I was sitting on the edge of my couch the whole time.
They just tried to give it away.
They really did.
They wanted to give it away. I can't understand it. And I think we got a tough game next week.
Oh, it's going to be a great game. You going to it?
Well, only if Lee provides tickets. So I have to talk to him about that.
Yeah. So, I've been waiting to try to get mine from Kevin, but he's holding out also.
Well, so. We'll see. We'll see who the most important radio show is.
That's right. We'll find out, won't we?
Well, we've got a great show today. Again, this is Brad Culp, and my partner Sam is not here today. We had double booked this morning. But we have with us this morning Kim Jones from Seasons Hospice and Palliative Care. Good morning, Kim.
Good morning, Brad. Good morning, Taylor. Welcome to your new role.
Oh, yeah, thank you. Good morning.
So you made it in the traffic. My goodness, it was
traffic
awful
was,
this morning.
Was awful this morning. Awful this morning. Hopefully one day we'll get this traffic situation figured out.
Yeah, we seem to be in our L.A. phase. I think we've been in that phase for a few years. But
I'm ready to move out of the L.A. phase.
Indeed. Well, Kim, as we always do on our show, we like to start by getting to know our guests a little bit. So
sure.
If you could just tell us a little bit about yourself, where you grew up and went to school and how you got to be doing what you're doing today.
Okay, sure. Love the opportunity. I actually grew up in Nebraska and spent a majority of my life in Nebraska and Iowa. I have family there. And my dad started getting transferred around the country, and we ended up in Pennsylvania. And at that point, I went to Slippery Rock University of Pennsylvania, and I have a Bachelor of Science in Recreation and Resource Management, which is actually how to manage water, wildlife, and timber. And by the time I graduated, that phase of recreation had really faded out, and community recreation was the new in fad. And I ended up working as a park ranger down with the city of Coral Springs, Florida. And at that point, I moved from being a park ranger to community recreation. And I worked a lot with youth, with day camps and senior groups planning events for them. And from there, I had the opportunity to come back to Georgia. I had lived here in the early 80s with my folks, and I had the opportunity to come back to Georgia. And I got a job with Gwinnett County Parks and Recreation in community services. And with community services, that encompasses senior services, libraries, and parks and recreation. And I was with them for about 19 years, and I did a little bit of everything there. I started out as a recreation supervisor at Shorty Howell Park in Duluth, was my first park. And I had several parks and worked with youth associations to coordinate games. And again, seniors, we had senior clubs. And eventually I moved up to be a coordinator over a larger area.
Excellent.
And did
Excellent.
The same thing.
So you probably know Pam Hoffman, who
yes,
over
I worked
at Bethesda mm-hmm. for a long time.
Yes, I worked with Pam for a long time and a bunch of folks over there and helped a lot at the senior center.
Although it's not technically part of Gwinnett County Senior Services, mm-hmm. I sit on the board for Friends of Gwinnett and you know, Pat Baker and Gary Galloway and all those
folks.
Yeah,
really familiar with Gary. Worked with him a lot while I was there, and I really like the events that Friends puts on at Del Mar Gardens.
Right.
Their fundraiser, I usually try to get to those every year.
Parks and Rec is obviously a close relative to senior services with the senior services.
Right.
That they
really,
operate.
Yeah, they really work hand in hand between Bethesda and now the new center that they have at George Pierce Park.
Right.
And so from there, I kind of got interested in the more of the social service aspect of it and did some research and decided to go back and get my master's in social work. So while I worked at Gwinnett, I went to UGA part-time and got my master's of social work. And during that time, I did an eight-month internship with Gwinnett Medical Center. And that kind of sold me on becoming a hospital social worker. And while I was at the hospital, I got my license. I sat for my licensure, so I am a licensed master social worker. And really enjoyed it and was able to get on full time with Gwinnett Medical Center. And in that time, I worked very closely with the palliative care team, which is generally some nurses and some physicians that will come in and talk to folks when they feel like hospice is something that they need to start to talk about because maybe the chemotherapy isn't working anymore, the radiation isn't working anymore, the patient and the family need more support. And I did a lot with, I actually worked on the cancer floor part of that time. And then I worked in progressive care, which is a step down from ICU. And that's where you see a lot of folks who really could benefit from the hospice element. And then the opportunity came for me to come and work for Seasons Hospice and Palliative Care. And it was a natural progression for me to go from the hospital to hospice. And hospice, I think, is a very misunderstood service. A lot of people feel like when you say hospice, that means you're going to die tomorrow. We're going to put you in a facility. You won't be able to do anything. And that's not what it's about. At Seasons, we do a couple things that are very unique. We have a board-certified music therapist who is part of our psychosocial team. We use music for pain management, agitation. There's a lot of really hard science behind the benefit of music therapy.
Talk a little bit more about that. I mean, what is music therapy?
Okay.
How is it administered?
Okay.
What are the effects?
You actually go to school for music therapy, and our music therapist, Anna, is excellent. She went Florida University, and she plays the guitar and she sings. So what she does when she goes to see one of our clients, she'll talk to them first to find out what kind of music they like, the family, and kind of get a grasp of the social situation. A really good example, and this was not in our office, but it was one of our other offices. We have 18 around the United States. There was a young man who was very ill, and he was living with his father, and he and his father did not have a good relationship. And the music therapist went in there and helped him write a song for his dad to help bridge that relationship for the time that they had left. Anna has also made a binder of gospel music for a particular patient. So she uses it on a counseling level also. She went with me one time to do a demonstration at a memory care unit, and they had just had a fire drill. So you can imagine everybody is really out of sorts. Anna picked up the guitar. She just started playing, and probably within 10 minutes, we had total calm. They were clapping. They were trying to sing with the music. If you have a patient who's very agitated and has a lot of anxiety, Anna will start her music very quickly, and then by the end of the session, she goes down very slowly, and generally the patient's very calm. You can use it in reverse. You can have a patient maybe needs a little bit of a pick-me-up. She'll start slow, and then by the end of the session, she'll play faster, and generally by then they're clapping and singing. And music is just a way, you know, if you think about it, you know, before you're born, you can be hearing music that your family's around. And so it, you know, it kind of makes sense. You come in with music and you can pass away with music. And it's just a universal connector.
Interesting. And how often does and you do your hospice work in facilities, in private homes?
We can do hospice in nursing homes, assisted livings, independent livings, at your home. We have inpatient units. generally 99% of the season's business we do at home. There's nothing our team can't manage at home.
So how do you do music therapy in the home? Does
the yeah, therapist... Anna actually goes to visit the clients. Yes. So wherever they are, she's got a regular schedule just like a hospice nurse would have, where she goes and sees the individual clients and has their sessions all put together before she gets there.
Wow, how about that? That's really interesting. It reminds me of a story. I don't know if you're familiar with the organization Second Wind Dreams, but P.K. Bevel, who has been on the show at least once, maybe twice, is the founder of that organization, and she had done some research on, you know, Second Wind Dreams exists for two reasons. One, to fill dreams for seniors that mm-hmm. they wouldn't otherwise have, which is very important. But the second aspect to it also is very important, which is training regarding, training for caregivers related to the dementia experience. And she came up with this thing called the Virtual Dementia Tour that she, you know, puts people in the shoes of those.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But one of her dreams that she filled was there was a man at a memory care facility who had fairly advanced stages of Alzheimer but was still ambulatory. But his dream was to get out. He had been a jazz musician, and his dream was to get out and play on stage one more time.
Mm-hmm.
And in the facility, he had no knowledge of his family, didn't recognize him, really a very low cognitive ability. They got him out, they put him on stage, and he played four or five songs from his head, played spectacularly, suddenly knew everybody around him, all his friends and his family that had come with him to hear him play. And it was just amazing what the music did to just bring him back and engage him, you know. And then he got back to the facility and kind of slipped back into, you know,
that's really the thing with dementia. It's like, you know, the person is in there. They just, you know, it's hard to make that connection, and music can really help the patient make a connection back with the family or vice versa.
Right.
And then one of the other programs that Seasons does is called the Touch for All Seasons. And that's where one of our certified hospice aides will spend a little extra time with the client and go into wherever that is. Maybe it's their home, they're living with a daughter, and they will pick up some nice music off of Pandora, off of their phone. And they, if it's a gentleman, let's say, they will use some lavender scents, because we know that has a calming effect on patients. And then what they'll do is they may give him a really nice close shave, and maybe when he was younger, he liked Old Spice or Aqua Velva, so they'll put that on him. For a woman, they may do a facial and hand massage and foot massage, because it's just giving them a little extra TLC and helping to connect. And we can also show families how to do these things so that they can connect with their family members that have dementia.
Right, right. Let me take you back for a second. You had talked about the palliative care department or initiative mm-hmm. at Gwinnett Medical Center, and I didn't even know they had something like that. So can you talk a little bit about what they're doing, and then also talk a little bit about what is palliative care and how does that play into what you do at Seasons? Because
okay.
I see in your name, you know, it's not just Seasons Hospice, right. It's Seasons Hospice and palliative
right.
care.
The palliative care program at the hospital, it started first with two nurses. And actually, one of the nurses now works with Seasons Hospice. And what would happen is a physician, a lot of times physicians have a difficult time having that end-of-life conversation with patients. You know, it's difficult for them. Their job, they've been trained to make you better, to cure you. And so what they do is they will write an order, and one of these nurses would come and review the chart and have a meeting with the patient and the family and actually bring the conversation down to their level. So, you know, sometimes when you talk to a doctor, you know, they talk way over your head and you're like, hey, man, you got to bring that down. I'm not following you. And that's what a palliative care nurse does. She goes in the chart and says, you know, okay, here's the disease that you have. Here's where you're at. and here's what you can expect down the road, and kind of talk about the options. It's just another tool to help educate that family, because the more education a family has and a patient has, the better decision they can make. Gwinnett Medical Center now, they have had started an actual palliative care program with their physicians, their hospitalists who work there. So they are now working in tandem with the nurses there to talk with families about where you are in your disease process. Because it's difficult for anybody to make a decision if you don't understand everything that's going on with you.
Sure. And maybe I don't understand this very well, and I'm going to show my ignorance here. But would they actually apply palliative care in the hospital? Because, you know, it seems to me that if you're in the hospital, they're trying to cure you, and palliative care isn't necessarily curing, but rather keeping comfortable.
Right, it's keeping comfortable. And what they normally do in the hospital is, it really depends on a patient's situation. A patient may be so ill that they're unable to leave the hospital, so they would put them on what we call comfort care orders, which is, you're not doing anything aggressive, you're simply keeping them comfortable. And usually you have a pretty short amount of time. But generally when hospitals start talking about hospice, you know, they're preparing you that you do not have a lot of time. You have to have a diagnosis of 6 months or less. But let me clarify, that does not mean that you're necessarily going to die in 6 months. We have people who stay on hospice for longer than 6 months. We have people who graduate from hospice because you get home or wherever you're going and you feel better.
Right.
So that hospice and palliative care conversation in the hospital is just starting to lay the foundation for the family to decide, okay, and the patient, do I want to keep coming back to the hospital and getting blood tests and everything? Do I want to keep doing the chemotherapy and feeling awful or the radiation? Because right. For every medical intervention, there's a positive and a negative.
Sure.
And for some people, they just get to the point where they decide, you know, I am really tired of feeling bad. I just want to have quality time, be comfortable, and be able to spend that time with my family and do what I want to do. And that's what hospice does. It's about doing what you want to do. We have a great foundation. So, you know, we help families. You know, we help families. Maybe you have family on the West Coast and you don't have enough money to fly them here to see you, and you have a short amount of time. Our foundation is going to work with you to make that happen.
Mm. So, and talk a little bit more about the Seasons Palliative Care Program. And let's clarify, Medicare is going to cover hospice. Mm-hmm. Does Medicare ever cover palliative care?
Well, right now, Seasons has palliative care. We do not have the palliative part of the program here in Atlanta yet. Mm. But palliative care is generally, you are not ready to give up your curative care measures. So it's more of a limited aspect of hospice. We do have a program, though, called Open Access. So let's say you need to have, you're having palliative radiation to shrink your tumors to help you breathe. We can still bring you on service and look at that and say, okay, we're going to go ahead and let you have two or three more radiation treatments, and then let's reevaluate to see if that's really providing you comfort. If it is, then we will continue to do it. So there are some very creative ways, and Seasons has a lot of wonderful care solutions that they can look at. And for some people, they need to just finish that radiation, and then they come off of it, and they're still on hospice. And we know, too, that some people have to continue to do that radiation or that chemotherapy just so in their own mind, in their own heart, they know, hey, I really tried everything.
Right. So How did you connect with Seasons, and why did you select Seasons from the multitude of hospices here in Atlanta?
Yes, and you're correct. There are probably about 200 hospices in Atlanta. Actually, I was not really looking to make the change yet to go to hospice. It was something I was thinking about, and the palliative care nurse who worked at Gwinnett Medical Center and who had gone to work for Seasons came and asked me, and she said, is this something that you might be interested in? And I said, well, let me talk to my family, let me do some thinking, and let me take a look at the company and see what you're all about. And I really like the philosophy of the company. They are a privately owned company. They don't own a bunch of other companies. The national office lets you think outside of the box. They want you to be creative. They bottom line is they want you to do what's right for the patient and the family. And, you know, all hospices do things differently, but I was just really impressed with their philosophy and their people and the people at the national office.
And where is the headquarters?
The headquarters is in Chicago, and we are all over the United States. We're on the West Coast, up the Eastern Seaboard. We're in the Midwest. So we're in a lot of different places. And again, you know, the thing with hospice that I really want people to understand is when a doctor talks to you or a palliative care nurse talks to you, you know, hospice is not, it's not a place. Hospice comes to you. Hospice provides that extra support. I like to tell families, you know, your family is coming into our family. Because, you know, yes, we're taking your mother on service and she has lung cancer, but we're also there to support the grandchildren, the daughters, the sons. Our job is to help take some of that care burden off the family so that, you know, you can be the daughter, you can be the son. We can help with, because we our team is social work, is a chaplain, nurses, CNAs, we can help start to prepare the family for the grieving process. And a great thing with hospice, and it doesn't seem great when you say it, but it really is once that patient makes their final journey home, hospice doesn't just go away. Hospice keeps following up with you for the next 13 months because we know birthdays and holidays are going to be difficult.
Right.
And we're going to be reaching out. We recently had a memorial service at the park in Duluth. And we create a very special program. We invite the families. They're able to get up and talk about their loved ones, which is very therapeutic. So there's lots of different things that we can do. We have a camp called Camp Kangaroo. One of the things Seasons is doing this year is up in Connecticut where the school shooting was, they're going to hold Camp Kangaroo there this year. And the foundation is going to support that effort in providing grief and trauma experts to help all those kids in that town and surrounding towns. So we're just a really creative organization, you know. And I hope when people listen to this that they'll keep an open mind about hospice because it's not about staying home. You know, we want you to do whatever you want to do. And another myth that we have about hospice is that they think the hospice is going to come in and they're going to, you know, use this morphine and they're going to give you so much medicine you're going to be sleeping all the time. We're only going to give you the amount of medicine you need to be comfortable. Does that mean at some point you're going to need more medication? Most likely, yes. So towards the end of your disease process, you will probably be a little more sleepy.
Yeah.
And we have one other great program we have is the Legacy Program because, you know, we get young patients too. And, you know, an example, there was a young father who had a four-year-old. And one of the things we did, we worked with Hallmark and we got him a book, one of those story books. So he read his daughter a story. So after he passed, his wife said the little girl likes to take that book up to her room every night and listen to her daddy read a story. Or it could be helping them write graduation, wedding cards, and different things like that, leaving a legacy behind for the family. We also work with them to do that.
Oh, that's great. So, Kim, you are your title is Hospice Care Consultant. What does that mean?
What I do is if I got a phone call from the hospital that said, you know, we need you to see Mrs. Smith, if you'll please come and talk to her about hospice services. So what I'll do is I'll go up and review the medical chart and work with the clinical team to make sure that they meet the Medicare criteria to be on hospice. And then what we're going to do is we're going to sit down and talk about what are your expectations, what are your goals, how did you get to where you are now? Because what we want to know is, you know, our company, Seasons, isn't going to come in and say, this is how everything is going to happen. Our mission statement is honoring life and offering hope. And we feel like families and patients are the people who know what they need. So we want to get together. I'm the start of the process. I'm talking about it. How does it work? Yes, it's a Medicare benefit, and many private insurances also have it. getting all that information together. And then once they decide, yes, we want to come on with Seasons Hospice, I finish up some admission paperwork. And then what happens when you leave the hospital is I will coordinate with one of our nurses to meet the patient at home. And the nurse is generally there right when the patient gets home or shortly thereafter. And she continues the process where they will finalize what is our starting care plan. How much, you know, how much do you want the aide to come in? Do you want the aide 3 times a week, 2 times a week? Our nurses always visit patients twice a week. So then that's when the whole team is coming in, not at one time, because people are like, oh my gosh, 7 people are going to be coming to my house.
Right.
No, we don't all come at one time, but we're creating that care plan. We're starting to educate the family on, here's what we expect your next emergency to be. How can we prepare for it? So it's not a surprise when we get to a point they're starting to have more trouble breathing. Because the idea of hospice is that you're not going back to the hospital. Hospice is always your first call. And one of the great things about Seasons is we have a call center. I like to call it our triage center. So families can pick up the phone and talk to a Seasons nurse 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And all of our medical records are electronic. So when you call the call center, if it's 3 a.m., and they can pull up Mrs. Smith and they can see all her records in real time. And we have emergency kits at the home that are generally medicines in a pill form or liquid form. And they may say, you know, give Mrs. Smith a little bit of this medicine. It doesn't mean our nurse isn't going to come out there, but it's a way to help you start to assess and triage the problem while the nurse is on the way.
Sure, sure. You've talked about a lot of the unique aspects of Seasons, but let me get you to kind of summarize. What is it? We talked about the fact that there are 200 hospices plus here in Atlanta. What is it that sets Seasons apart?
I think there's a couple things that set Seasons apart. I think the call center, so you're not calling a call service and have to wait for somebody to call you back. That used to be kind of frustrating for me at the hospital. Sometimes I'd have to wait to get a call back if it was after 5. As far as music therapy, as far as I know, we're the only company that actually has a board-certified music therapist. And also, as far as I know, we're the only ones that have the Touch for All Seasons and the Legacy programs. There may be some hospices that have some things that are very similar. Our team is very responsive. We work very closely as a team. And, you know, once you are in the Seasons family, you are always in the Seasons family. You know, our job is to help you finish well. And that's what we want to do. We want to help people finish well.
Excellent. I had a question on the top of my mind that it was really important. Oh, yeah, I remember now. Sorry. In our business, you know, our business is home care. We put caregivers in people's homes, and oftentimes our clients are on hospice. You talked about the fact that you don't call the hospice, the hospital, you call the hospice. What's your perspective on it? So clearly, hospice is going to be always your first and probably only contact with respect to the disease that you're dealing with or the reason that they're on hospice. What happens if a client takes a fall, has an injury, a cut or a gash or a broken bone or something like that?
When I say that too, and that's a good point to really clarify that, if one of our clients falls and breaks a leg, they're going to go back to the hospital and get their leg fixed. If they fall and get a gash, we're going to send them back to the hospital. But our primary goal is to keep them out of the hospital with what their primary diagnosis is, be a, you know, heart failure, cancer, or COPD.
Now, if there was a professional caregiver in the home, you know, as opposed to a family member, would you want the caregiver to call hospice first before they call 911, or you know, in the case of a fall with a fracture, would they just call 911?
We always ask that they call us first, and that's the great part about having the call center, because they can call and that Seasons nurse picks up and they say, hey, you know, my mom just fell and broke her leg. They're going to say, okay, you know, call an ambulance and get her to the hospital.
Sure.
So because, you know, we also need to be aware that they've gone back to the hospital.
Right.
And, you know, every hospice has a medical director also. So there is a doctor who is managing their care. Ours is Dr. Martin Austin, and he's the chief hospitalist at Gwinnett Medical Center.
Okay. Great. Mm-hmm. Great. I may blindside you with this question a little bit. We were talking earlier. I had just come from this care transitions meeting, and I know some of your folks were there. Care transitions, of course, has a lot to do with, almost everything to do with, preventing readmissions for certain diagnoses. Mm-hmm. And it's something, of course, hospitals are very interested in. Skilled nursing facilities are interested in it. Certainly assisted living, independent living, home care companies, we're all interested because we're kind of in line for care once somebody's readmitted. What is hospice's interest in the care transitions program? How does that affect you?
Well, we can be a great partner with hospitals, with home care companies, you know, private home care companies such as yours, to assist with keeping patients, you know, out of the hospital. We work with several companies, so when people have private caregivers, we just incorporate them into our team, and they're part of the team meeting. I think all of those groups are going to be an important aspect of helping hospitals reduce the length of stay. And, you know, with all the Medicare guidelines coming in with, you know, readmissions within the first 30 days. And it's really going to take all of us working together, because there may be a private home company who is helping a patient, and they realize, you know what, this patient might benefit from hospice. So they might be the start of the process by recommending, right. You know, hey, I'm not telling you this is what you need to do, but I'm suggesting that, you know, would you be willing to talk to somebody about hospice and at least get the information going forward? As far as the nursing homes and the skilled facilities, it's going to be, you know, the same thing for them. They may have patients who can't make it through physical therapy, who right. really may need hospice. And so, you know, they're going to need to reach out to a company and say, you know, we really think this family needs, can you at least come and do the information session? Because right. that's where it all starts, is with that first informational session. People may not make that decision right at that moment, but they again have that educational piece so they can make a good decision.
Right. Yeah. And as you were speaking, the light kind of went on this for me, because one of the issues that is talked about a lot with care transitions is kind of grounding the frequent flyers. And the frequent flyers may be good candidates for hospice. So, you know, rather than continuing to fight the disease and, you know, having repeated hospital visits, you know, instead they're looking at hospice, and, you know, and that kind of takes them out of the system for the readmissions and puts them on a little bit different path.
Right. And that's really what hospice is. It's just, you're choosing a new path. You know, you're choosing comfort, you're choosing quality of life. And yeah, they're going to be looking at the frequent flyers, because there comes a point in some of the disease processes where chemotherapy and radiation aren't going to be effective anymore. Mm-hmm. And that's when it comes down to, you've got to have that hard discussion and start that talk about end of life issues, you know, so that they can understand, you know, okay, I have to weigh now, do I want to keep doing this knowing it's not going to help me, or do I want to move to hospice? And I think it's really a misconception in this society. We don't cure like cancers. We manage cancers. Yes, we put you into remission and things like that. We don't really cure them. We just manage them.
Right, right. It's interesting, too, because for us, the key way that we can help from a home care company perspective in the care transitions process is to educate our caregivers. There are some companies out there that have these aftercare programs, you know, coming out of the hospital, mm-hmm. and those are great, and we do that too. But if the caregivers don't know what to do, it's useless. So we're really focused on providing education for the caregivers so that they can deal with hospital discharges and keep them out. In the same way, it occurs to me that it would be great to have from a company like yours guidelines and education for caregivers on how to identify candidates for hospice, people that are moving into that stage where it could be a benefit. And, you know, again, it's all about the caregiver education, because they're the ones out there every day seeing these clients and seeing the progression of their disease, and, you know, being able to then introduce them to somebody who can talk about this alternative path.
And, you know, and that's something we focus on too as a hospice, because being a caregiver is really hard work. It really is. And it takes a lot of energy. And I think for people, you know, if you have a loved one that has a cancer diagnosis or has a COPD, one of the things that you might look at is, how often are you going to the hospital now? How often are you going to the doctor now? You know, what is their symptom burden like? Or, you know, we're having a lot more shortness of breath or other symptoms. And then it might be time to ask if, you know, if you guys, Griswold's in the home, to ask that caregiver, hey, do you know any hospices? You know, or reach out to your friends or other people and say, hey, do you know of a hospice? One of the best things people can do is, when they have a good hospice experience, is share it with somebody else, because that helps to slow down the myth.
Absolutely. And the myths are rampant.
Yeah. And there's nothing wrong with making that phone call and having them just come out and talk to you. It doesn't mean that that's the direction you have to go. I think a lot of times in healthcare, what people do, and I saw it a lot in the hospital, is they think the decision is either black and white. There's no gray area. And a lot of times there's no right or wrong answer. You try this path, and if it's not for you, okay, then we need to reassess and do another path.
Yeah.
And hospice is the same way. You can come on hospice, and if, you know, 6 months down the road, you say, you know what, I really want to get back there. There's a trial I want to try out, or I want aggressive care again. That's okay. You can come off hospice.
Right, right. I think you've told us a lot about what you do and why you do it, but let me ask you very specifically, why do you do what you do? What recharges your batteries? What keeps you going?
You know, for me, the biggest thing is it's the gift I'm able to give patients and families every day. Because working in a hospital, I have seen people who have not had good finishes. And for everybody I can help do that is a gift for me. Yes, it's hard work. Yes, I'd be lying if I didn't say there were days I went home boo-hooing and crying. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you learn how to do some self-care. You rely on your teammates. And it's just, you know, helping that family and that patient finish well. And many patients who come on hospice and families are very thankful for that service and are really glad that they did it.
I think that it takes a special kind of person to be able to do hospice work. It's got to be very, very difficult. I'm sure it can be heartbreaking at times, but obviously it can be very rewarding as you help families to finish well. As we wrap up here, I'm going to lead you a little bit with our tip. Mm-hmm. But for families who might have, well, the families themselves or the patient that might be reluctant to investigate hospice because they feel like they're giving up.
Mm-hmm.
And I know, and I ask that because I saw that with my mother-in-law 7 years ago. But the family said, nope, we're not going to put her on hospice because that means we're giving up. What kind of advice would you give to families like that?
Hospice is, just keep in mind, hospice is not about giving up. And it's something that you need to be open-minded to try, because a lot of patients who come on hospice, when they, you know, they get off of all these medicines that they don't need, they start feeling better. Their quality of life gets better. And I think we need to learn to focus more on what is the quality of life that they have. Because with some diseases, it may not be the cancer that ends your life. It may be the heart attack. It may be the congestive failure. You know, so it's really about what is the quality of life. You know, how is it affecting the patient, the family, the kids, the grandkids, and how can I benefit from the support of hospice? Mm. Because again, we're encompassing the whole family We're taking your family and bringing them into the Seasons family. Mm. And even when your mother passes away or your family member passes away, we're always there for you. We're always a phone call away.
Excellent, excellent. One other myth that you kind of dispelled right there, and you had addressed it earlier, but it's important, and I want to make one last comment about it. You talked about bringing people off meds, and it's, I think certainly one of the concerns or accusations leveled against hospice is that they over-medicate. Mm-hmm. But I've seen exactly what you described, where somebody comes onto hospice, they get rid of all those extraneous medications, and they bring it down to only what's necessary for comfort. And they do thrive. And we had a client, and we've talked about this on the air before, but we had a client out in Oxford who, when we got him, he was on hospice. And, you know, we looked at him and said, yeah, why are you on hospice? You don't look like you need hospice. But he had congestive heart failure, and that was the reason he was on hospice. And our caregivers came in and worked with him, and the family was around and worked with him. And he was on hospice for 2.5 years.
Right, and that's why I say you have to have a diagnosis of 6 months or less.
Right.
But that doesn't mean you're going to die in 6 months. We have people who come off of our service.
So, well, and that's what happened in this case. So he was on for 2.5 years. He came off hospice. Mm-hmm. We served him. We stopped serving him for a while. Then we came back. We served him for another 6 months. He went on hospice again, mm-hmm. lived about 8 more months. Mm-hmm. So, you know, from the time we met him, and he went on hospice to the time he finally passed was nearly 5 years.
Right, and I think people, when they think of hospice, they think, well, the person has to like look like they're on death's door, knocking on death's
door.
Yeah, 2 days left. And it's, and really, when you've waited that long, you know, you've really missed the opportunity to have that gift of hospice and to have that support.
Yeah. Very good, very good. Well, Kim, thank you so much for being on the show. For our listeners that might want to contact you, what would be the best way for them to do that?
If you want to just get some general information about Seasons, you can go to www.seasons.org, and our office number is 404-250-4950. And, you know, I want to encourage people, just make the call. Sometimes in life, the hardest part is making the call. And just because you call to talk to us doesn't mean you have to sign up, but it's a start.
Very good. Thank you again.
Thanks.
To our listeners. Thanks for tuning in. As always, if you want to listen to a rebroadcast of the show, you can do so by going to www.ugeriaradio.com. We'll be back again next week with another edition. As we always close, if the youth of this nation are its greatest national resource, it stands to reason that the seniors of this nation are its greatest national treasure. Thank you, and God bless.
Ugeria Radio is sponsored by Griswold Special Care and broadcast live from the Business Radio X studios.